I've come back to perhaps have a strategic overview and an alternative there, because that's the other question that keeps getting asked, well, what could happen instead? And very clearly there are practical alternatives. As a British Pakistani, do you think the British Pakistani community here is caught between a rock and a hard place? On the one hand, people associated with terrorism themselves. On the other hand, no country has given a greater sacrifice in the war, in the cause of the war on terror than Pakistan. More troops, more Pakistani troops have been killed than American and British troops combined. And yet, Pakistan is still seen as a rogue state, as a state to be suspected.
Absolutely. I think as a British Pakistani of Pakistani origin, but obviously live my life here, but I think the sacrifices of the Pakistani people are paramount in this discussion. It is the ordinary people in the markets of Peshawar and the, you know, the squares of Lahore and everywhere else that are being literally blown to pieces. It is the suicide bombing that is unrelenting. It is the aggression, the insidious Pakistani Taliban now, which are, you know, a rebel force within their own country, an anti-state force feared by most ordinary people. And, you know, the government has taken on a war by proxy on behalf of America and bombed its own people. The drone attacks are continuing and increasing. We don't know who they're hitting and how successful they are. Ordinary people are being caught up in them. That's inevitable. The country is becoming destabilized inevitably. Relations with India are worsening, and as if they've ever been any good in the first place. So the whole state is at a point of potential fracture, you know, and that is as a result of his policies and aid for a war that fundamentally isn't a war of the people of Pakistan, and it is the ordinary civilians, the women and children, that are inevitably suffering. And you can feel that in the streets, not just of Pakistan, but here, of Pakistanis who form the majority of Muslims, I think, in this country, and their sympathies lie with the ordinary people.
Sure. If I can just ask Andrew, in the final few seconds we have in the first half of our programme, what would you say to people to encourage them to come this Saturday? Where should they come? Where should they meet?
Well, it's Trafalgar Square, in the heart of London, from 12 noon, where we'll be starting off by remembering the dead. That will be done by Rose Gentle and Joan Humphreys, two British women who've lost sons and grandsons in these wars in Iraq and Afghanistan. And we really want people to come to say 10 years, enough is enough. This has been going on now for a whole decade, longer than two world wars combined. Today we've explored just some of the chronic problems it's caused, the immense suffering, and we feel it's now time to say Britain needs to stop being any part of this war on terror.
Thank you very much. Thank you to all our guests. Please don't forget Ghosts of Afghanistan by Jonathan Steele, The Butterfly Hunter by Max Malik, and join our organisers here this Saturday in London. Be there for the 10th anniversary and do join us for the second half. Thank you. Either in prison or on bail since his arrest 3 months ago. UK authorities have sought to deport him, but Salah has challenged both his arrest and his pending deportation. He's currently appealing his deportation before an immigration and asylum tribunal in Birmingham. Separately, the High Court in London ruled last week that part of Salah's detention in June was unlawful. Salah is accused of anti-Semitism, and Home Secretary Theresa May has sought to exclude him from the UK on the grounds that his presence in the UK isn't conducive to public good. Well, with me in the studio to discuss the case is Shamil Jorda of Friends of Al-Aqsa. Welcome to the programme, Shamil. We're also joined by Sarah Colburn, who's Director of the Palestine Solidarity Campaign. Thank you for joining us. And we have on the line Alex Crutcher, who is outside the court dealing with this case. Thanks, Alex, for being there. We'll come back to you for a report. And on the phone, we have Dr. Hanan Chahata of the Middle East Monitor. Welcome to the programme, Hanan. So if we can go, first of all, to a clip to have an update as to what's been going on.
When Sheikh Raed Salah was detained upon his arrival in the UK in June this year, it sparked outrage among rights groups and his supporters. The renowned Palestinian activist and religious leader seen here 4 years ago in Jerusalem was in London as part of a public speaking tour, but was arrested without any explanation. At the time, Home Secretary Theresa May said she banned him, with the Home Office now admitting that it hadn't told anyone about the travel ban. Pakistan, least of all Salah or his tour organisers, who all entered the country legally.
Sheikh Raed Salah came to this country legally to visit, to discuss the peace process in the Middle East and to represent Palestinian opinion within the 1948 borders. He was due to speak at a meeting in Parliament. There was a campaign by some of the media in this country, particularly the Daily Mail, the Jewish Chronicle and the Evening Standard, saying that he was a dangerous extremist and shouldn't be allowed in. There was no problem with his presence here. He spoke at a number of meetings, including visiting Parliament. That evening, he was arrested and put in Campsfield Detention Centre and then moved to a Category B prison in Bedford, where he remains at the present time. And the Home Secretary effectively has put him in executive detention by giving him a deportation order.
3 months later, and the British High Court has now ruled that Sheikh Raed Salah had been wrongfully detained upon his arrival and that he is entitled to damages for this. After wrongfully detaining the Palestinian leader, the Home Secretary had unsuccessfully tried to deny him bail, but Salah successfully applied for and was granted bail in the High Court in July. Today's ruling compounds the approach taken by the British government towards Salah, who was accused by some sections of the press of harbouring anti-Semitic views. It comes a week after a report in the Guardian newspaper revealed that Theresa May was even warned by senior officials in the UK border agency not to deport Salah, saying the evidence against him was disputed, open to legal challenge, and that the case was very finely balanced. Sheikh Raed Salah is resolute in his determination to correct the allegations made against him and will now focus his appeal to overturn the deportation order in the first tier immigration tribunal.
Well, if we can go first of all to Alex, who's been at the court this morning, what have been the summing up of the case for and against?
Well, this morning so far we've had the first submissions of the Home Office and representatives of Sheikh Raed Salah. Mr. Neil Sheldon, who opened for the Home Office, focused upon the fact that the decision made by the Home Secretary in consultation with other government departments, in consultation with the Foreign Office and the Department of Communities and Local Government, was her democratic prerogative as a democratically accountable member of government. She was acting in accordance with various laws put in place. The question of the evidence, it relies on five different bits and pieces which were presented before before the government.
Mm-hmm. And what would you say was the main...
Sorry, the line's a bit shaky.
...of the case, apart from the fact that the Home Secretary does have a right to intervene on a matter like this, what was the actual evidence of her doing so? What was the basis? Was that outlined today?
Well, the evidence itself is disputed, and the representative for the Home Office acknowledges this. However, his argument is not so much that the evidence itself is disputed, but it's more what the evidence implies and what it's interpreted to mean, rather than what the evidence actually means. By contrast, the representatives for Mr. Salah are putting forward the argument that it is exactly what the evidence means, rather than what it's perceived to mean, that is at the core of the legal process.
Mm-hmm.
And the other considerations, such as Sheikh Raed Salah's previous travel in and out of the UK and other countries as well, are not taken into question, and also the refusal of the Home Office to take into consideration the political realities of what is happening in Israel and Palestine, which Mr. Hussein is arguing, at any rate, is integral to the case.
Okay, well, thank you for that update, Alex. If I can turn to you, Sarah, is this really about legal arguments, or is this a political